The entire I Do Notes podcast family is now a Spike Studio production.
It's the Social Geeks, episode number 34, My Dog Just Coughed, brought to you by Vidyo and GoDaddy. See the show notes for all the information on both of those awesome providers. Sarah's off to clicking already. Welcome, everybody.
Oh. Sorry. I didn't know we were recording. Start over.
It's the Social Geeks. Late at night, back from South by Southwest. Everybody survived. I have Miss Sarah Perez, as we heard.
Hi.
Hello. And Wayne Sutton. Wayne, sir.
Hello.
Hello. On his lovely backup headset. So we're off and running tonight. There is lots of news coming out, and we're going to try to keep it to the point, keep everybody on topic, because I think we're going to have to do this again in about another week at this rate with all the junk that's coming out the door pretty quick. We made a list. We scrapped it twice. We made another list. We scrapped it again, so we're down to a few. Uber Media comes out of the gates and says, you know, I think since Twitter cut us off and made us rename stuff, we need to go ahead and create our own Twitter network. What the heck you guys think about that one? Who wants to go first?
Wayne.
Okay, my first thought on that is why do we need another Twitter? Why do we need another social network? Kind of like what we were talking about previous to the show recording. Second thought on that is Yammer seemed to be doing well as a business Twitter platform. Salesforce has Chatter, which is basically a Twitter for, you know, their mm-hmm. platform. Urban Media has the apps, has the apps. They have development team, something that Twitter didn't have when they first launched. So could they build a new and better Twitter? I don't think anybody can build a new and better Twitter, but I think they could build a unique platform like Twitter, targeted to a certain demographic based off their apps that they already have a user base for, and be successful. And successful doesn't mean, well, a lot of people, we're talking about web apps and social networks, we mean like 100 million users like LinkedIn or Twitter trying to get to the Facebook numbers. Successful to me, and which could be if we lower our standards and come out of the bubble a little bit, is, you know, a couple million users and be very profitable and be a very successful company. And then slowly watch the growth from there. And that's what I think Uber, whichever one media could do.
Well, wait, is it going to be, are you saying free, freemium, or paid?
I think they're going to launch with a freemium model with paid premium features. That would be the smart thing to do, targeted to a certain demographic. That's because they have the apps that a lot of people already have installed. They don't want to tick off too. I wouldn't want to tick off too many of my users saying, you know, AdBase, which I think what TweetDeck, you know, has did previously, you know, wishing, you know, custom themes, ads, so forth, inline ads, which they have the users. They know who has apps installed. They know their location. They can do a lot of things within the app. So I think a freemium model.
What about you, Sarah?
What do I think about it?
Yeah, do you think they should go for it? Do you think it's a waste of time? Do you think they're crazy?
I think they're a little crazy, but I like a little craziness out there on the internet. It keeps it interesting. But I mean, I don't think that, like you said, they're not going to be able to compete with Twitter on the same scale. And I think that it's somewhat of a power play just to say, hey, Twitter, you can't push us around like that. And, you know, screw over the developer community, you know, we'll just take our business elsewhere. So it's sort of a little bit of, you know, trying to show Twitter who's boss, I think.
Do they have a user base that they think they could bring along? Is that, I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, they do have, what, 11.5% of tweets, according to one study, were sent through Uber Media. So they're not insignificant, and if they end up acquiring TweetDeck, which I don't think has happened yet, they would have a significant, significantly larger amount of tweets too. But as it stands right now, even if, let's say, they took 40% of the tweets that are out there, I don't know why I would want to tweet on Twitter and tweet on Uber Media's network as well. Like, I'm a little bit, which we were talking about before the show, I'm a little bit burned out on all these communities we have to join, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, this new one from Uber Media, and like we were talking about the ones that died back in the day, you know, the Plurk and the Identica was around and all this stuff. And now every little app has its own community, whether it's, you know, you're posting about what TV show you're watching, or you're checking in somewhere on Foursquare, or maybe you like Goala, or, you know, it's just, or maybe you want to join the community for the pictures you take on Instagram, and it's getting to be a bit much. So no, I'm not going to join a million different little communities just to tweet things.
Right. The only reason I would join for them to make it easy is if they had some sort of conversation ability built into the service. And like Wayne said, it may have to be freemium probably, but you brought it up. Identica still runs as an open source platform. Plurk is gone. All these other startups that tried to do them is gone. I tried the Intuit Spheres. It sucked. Social Text has their own messaging. Wayne brought up some other paid services that offer a good controlled paid service, but it restricts you from getting to the public sector. So whatever client they do, they would have to integrate somehow with the public side to keep the masses watching them, and then have a freemium service built around it, like additional features and tools. But there's a lot of clients that do that. And that's one of the things that Twitter's been doing, is knocking these third parties down and writing it themselves. Right?
Sure.
If you're not building a platform that does something besides tweet, like graphing, profiling data, they're knocking you out of the box.
Well, like if they got TweetDeck, you know, it integrates with tons of other services besides Twitter. And it's not just a matter of, oh, yeah, there's an app that lets me, you know, tweet and Foursquare and Facebook and blah, blah, blah. It's the fact that I have to set up an account and maintain a separate presence, maybe even psychological presence, in two different communities.
Right.
And I don't have the bandwidth for that anymore. You know, I have a Twitter presence. I have it on my business cards. And it is my public profile. And if we're friends, real life friends, we can be Facebook friends. That's the extent of, you know, publicity that I really need. And sure, I have a Flickr, and I have, you know, and I have accounts on all this other stuff. But I don't need a public persona on those accounts. I don't need to say, oh, follow me here and here and here and here and here and here. I'm just, you know, if you want to follow me, here's one place you can do it.
Couple of things on that. So I think I just put some posts. So I guess the Uber Media buys TweetDeck for $30 million is not
Uber.
Is it Uber?
No, it's
no, I'm just kidding.
It doesn't matter.
All right. I'm gonna kill for the show. Buys TweetDeck for $30 million. I guess that deal just hadn't been approved yet, or still waiting on it. That was back in February. And I think what we run into is, you know, as both Sarah and I agree on the part about, there's a lot of social networks and kind of getting social network burnout a little bit, is that, you know, we've been doing this for a while now. We came up in a generation. We're, I think, I'll probably say second leg of the Facebook generation. We were not the original, you know, college students that joined Facebook, but we were the original people who, like, right there when Twitter first launched, right there when LinkedIn first launched, yeah, right there when Dig and others, MySpace, other social networks just launched. So we've been doing this for a while now, a few years going on. And so we've seen a lot. Unless something brand new comes out that really overtakes Facebook or really competes with a Google and a Twitter or a LinkedIn, nothing really going to impress us. But for outside of that group, which is not, it's the early adopters, the tech bubble group. There's the whole new generation, millions of users out there who are like just now learning about Twitter, just now getting into Facebook, just now creating a LinkedIn profile. And this next generation is looking for, like, Facebook is older than them. They're looking for the next big thing. And so, not saying Urban Media or another social network can't launch and would not be successful, just that I would like to make observation that we're getting older and a little burnout, and there's everybody looking for the next big thing. And I do truly believe that something else is going to be coming that everybody's going to go ooh ah over, and it's going to be a combination of mobile, local, and social. Will it be color?
Foursquare.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Well, and did you guys, so to kind of segue in, did you guys get your email from LinkedIn that showed you your membership number?
No. Or maybe it went to my spam folder.
Ah, see. So if you were one of the first X, the first X amount of users, you got a welcome, an email from them thanking you for being there, and it told you what number you were joining their service.
Oh, I guess I wasn't an early adopter of LinkedIn then.
Correct. You had to be a nice early adopter of them to actually to get that email from them. And the idea was, is it was telling you, one, you know, thank you, of course, for being part of it. Here it is. I got it. It came out.
What's the subject line say?
Your name. Thank you for being among LinkedIn's first X members.
Okay.
It'll say they want to thank you for being one of the first whatever members and your member number. I was member number 4,932.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
I remember, all I remember was going back when I saw that story about that, I went and checked my profile and said I've been a member of LinkedIn since June 27, 2005.
Well, after the ID number in your profile URL, that's your member number. So all you right. can get your member number by looking at your profile URL. If you haven't customized, you have to go to the back end side, but get the actual ID number, and that is your member number. So I'm 4932 out of at least the first 100,000 they thanked for being a member of the site. So.
Yeah, I was 300,000, 302,431. So
you're like in a new zip code. Okay. Yeah. We summed it up. We all agreed on that one, so we're done. We agreed. All of us would have a hard time signing up for another service that, unless it really had an inherent value, that it would just be another service. So who had photo sharing? Who brought up that one? Who was that?
I think
Wayne mentioned color.
Well, color, yeah. And the other takeoffs around the Instagrams and the others. So go for it, Wayne. You can start us off.
Okay, so I guess the big three were color, or Instagram, Path, and PicPlease. And then color came out of nowhere, got racked up $41 million in funding. And, you know, which I guess a serendipitous photo community, mobile community.
Well, yeah, we can break down what it does in a second. But
yeah. And it kind of shook ways in a VC community but really didn't shake ways in the photo sharing community, just saying, oh, here's another app. And then our missing members tonight mentioned how there's Squirrel and some other photo sharing apps. And so it's like, you know, is that the next great app? You know, way to get $1 million or get rich is to do photo sharing apps. And I think we already have enough photo sharing apps. We already can do enough with our pictures on our phone. And will color be the one, or are we just riding the photo sharing app bubble right now?
Yeah, it feels a little bubbly just because I don't think that there's, you know, that much value in being able to, you know, apply a million different filters to your photos and then share them with your friends. I mean, because essentially sharing photos with friends, that's Facebook's main purpose, you know? So, I mean, all they've really added to that concept is that you're tweaking them to look like art projects. You know, and I'm talking specifically about like the Instagram-like services. Color's a little different, has some kind of interesting technology. I think the reason it got so slammed in the press and no one was willing to give it a shot was just because of the, you know, the rock star founders and the funding that they got. It seemed outrageous for the product. I mean, when you get that amount of money, I think people expect you to launch out of the gate with something fantastic. And they launched kind of early before it was done, and before they even had a good UI in place. And I think that kind of was ridiculous. I remember Robert Scovel, I listened to his Cinch, where he was talking about color, and he was just going off on it, saying it was ridiculous. The first thing you do when you launch this app is you have to take a picture of yourself, and what a terrible user experience that is. So, which I kind of agree. Like, if you're sharing photos in an event, it doesn't necessarily have to be a photo of you, you know? Right. So, they also missed a window by not launching at South by Southwest. I think that was really, really bizarre that they launched, what was it, a week later, 2 weeks later or something? Just seemed like they missed a really big opportunity to be very popular with that crowd.
I mean, not going back through South by Southwest, but the overabundance of apps at South by Southwest was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Absolutely yeah. ridiculous. And we should talk about those next time and actually do a roundup of what we still have installed versus what we did, you know, the whole thing, because that was ridiculous. There was too many. Everywhere you went, they're like, scan, install, install, scan. It was.
Well, which ones did you use? Just real quick.
What did I keep or what did I use?
What did you use while you were there?
Crap. We used Beluga. I was using PicPlease. I used Food Spotting. Of course, using Foursquare. I used Hashable. I used, I installed about six or seven more, and I can't remember some of all the names. Liquid Space, some others.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're out crazy.
Well, you want to find out what's the winner, right? And even the photo sharing. I used PicPlease while I was there a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really see the inherent value of it. I'd rather just upload straight to Flickr and be done.
Yeah.
I don't see the extra. I don't see
that was my dog. She just coughed or barfed or something. I don't know.
I don't know what the big thing about, you know, PicPlease was or anything. It just didn't do anything. I'm trying to upload to a photo set and I just want to be done. So the photo sharing apps to me aren't that exciting. Color is a whole different ball game because it isn't just you uploading. It's about, you know, proximity and who's around and all that other stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we did see an abundance of apps at South by Southwest and it was kind of overwhelming it. And my primary apps were, you know, because I feel like this year I just wanted to be on the back channel. I really didn't feel like broadcasting on Twitter so far. And so I want to have more private conversation with various groups of people, like you guys, Social Geeks, and some other friends of Blacks in Text, and some of my other friends from North Carolina. So Beluga was the perfect app for that for me. And then I used the Foursquare and Gowalla while I was there primarily for checking in. But outside of that was kind of really it. Didn't use Twitter a whole lot, didn't Facebook a whole lot, didn't take a whole lot of photos this year. And what I've noticed, and I use Yobongo a little bit because it was there with Caleb.
Right.
But what we noticed, even talking with Caleb about Yobongo, is that a lot of these apps, we upload photos, enhance them with a filter and so forth, like we use like with the Instagram or either PicPlease or the Daily Boost or something like that, when we have time. You know, or either standing in a grocery line, I'm chatting with people in Yobongo or something like that, or I'm watching TV and I want to chat with my friends, you know, about a TV show, about what's going on, or that nature. But when you get South by Southwest, you know, you want to do an activity and then get back to an offline conversation.
Right.
Or you trying to organize some sort of gathering around a session or a party or just a meetup with some other individuals. And so what the primary tools for that, which was the group messaging and the other ones, that group messaging apps that made it easy for you to create those groups, which like Beluga, a GroupMe, a Fast Society could do. And so that's why I feel like I primarily used those apps. And the other ones was just, you know, they were not, the UI was not easy enough, like a color, when, you know, it first launched or you didn't get it, or too much work, or it required both people to have something involved. Or it required you sharing something you didn't want to share right at that time, like a Hashable. You know, there was some bad PR about Hashable after it from the CEO, internet journalist after South by Southwest. And it was also interesting to see that Google launched Disco, another group chat after South by Southwest.
Yeah,
crap.
And so it's just still app overload. Exactly. And to some aspect.
There's one I wanted to see take off called, what was it, Tabber or Tabbed? Tabbed?
Yeah.
Where you went to the different bars and they scanned it and you just charged it straight to you, whatever was on file, and you kept on going for bar hopping. That was a neat idea.
That's cool.
It's neat at the bars.
You know, I have to say this about like the mobile apps. I just feel like the technology that we have available in our phones is just vastly underutilized by people launching kind of simplistic applications, thinking that that's going to be the key to success. I'd love to see someone just bet really big and launch something totally crazy, like an app that, you know, uses GPS to locate your friends, and then when they, or people that you've run into, and ties all these different apps together, and then like it lights up when they're near, within their in proximity, and then provides you with a history of your interactions. Like, here's your friend, you know, Wayne, and you met him last at South by Southwest, and here's a photo you guys took together, and here's his most recent status, and just kind of pops that up as an alert or something. You know, just maybe it could use even Bluetooth or something to sense other people around you. You know, I'd love to see something that's like, wow, I've never seen anything like that before. That's crazy. And And even if it's not successful or whatever, I'd love to see someone just betting really, really big and doing something new instead of just saying, oh, I've got another photo app. I've got another group app, you know, or something like that. And just, you know, doing something different.
Sarah wants us to either be voyeurs or stalkers. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah. Well, just doing something like, you know, using technology in different ways. I mean, we have all these sensors in our phones, but how are they being used? You know, like for gaming, you know, let's use them for something different and new. Like, I mean, I love the fact that there's, you know, geofencing is starting to come into play with family, what do you call it? You know, the family plans where it's like you see if your kid is at school or
family,
whatever.
Family locator.
Yeah. Family locator. Yeah, yeah. I'm tired. You know, like, I love that there's, you know, we're starting to use like the geofencing, and there's services that do that to where you could also get coupons that sort of just show up when you're in a store on your phone. And AT&T launched something with that, and you've got Cellfire, the mobile app, has launched something with that, but they don't have a whole lot of participation from the stores. But you know, why not use geofencing in some really cool new way with a social network or with a photo network or with, you know, a location-based network of some sort, even if it's not with friends per se, but just people around you. You know, who's doing something like that? That's not just some silly game, like some Foursquare Wars game or something like that.
Yeah, I think there are some apps out there like that. But the problem, one of the problems is, I think, is they don't have a strong user base, or it's too technical, or the UI is just bad, and it's not enough to go mainstream. Like I have a friend in North Carolina who owns a augmented reality. He's a founder of augmented reality company. Mm-hmm. He's doing some amazing stuff with augmented reality, and he call them Earthmarks, where you open your iPhone, look at Earthmark, you can see and Earthmark contains data. It's like a geofence augmented reality game or app where I can put in like my date, I can put in any type of content from like a photo, a video, a status update, anything in that Earthmark, and then also give it the make it look like the Empire State Building. So when I come back with the app, if somebody's come behind me and they look at it with that Earthmark with the app, they see the Empire State Building in North Carolina and see what the content I put in there, and they can interact with my content there. Inside, you know, augmented reality, you know, within an app. Sounds kind of super cool, technical. You can do coupons, you can do games, all that sort of thing. But the UI could be a little bit better.
Yeah.
And still, it's like, okay, that's cool. It's next. We want augmented reality. It's the augmented reality without the goggles through your mobile device. But how many people really need that right now or want it? And if I'm a business, why couldn't I? Because I can then take the Empire State Building, put my company logo on the Earthmark. But if the app doesn't have a million users, why am I going to do that?
Right.
Right.
There's no adoption rate.
But somebody's got to build what's next. And, you know, everybody's just building for, you know, to get a million users right now. I mean, when some of these, like when Facebook, you know, based on what the movie told me, when Facebook was built, it wasn't like about monetizing it instantly, you know, like
not being cool.
Mark Zuckerberg had a dream, damn it.
What the movie told me.
Yeah. That movie, you know, I love that movie.
Yeah, it was such a good movie.
Well, let's do this.
No, I'm serious. But like Facebook didn't like just say, oh, we've got to make money from this, you know, right away. And I think that there needs to be some applications on mobile where it's not about trying to get a million users and trying to have a business, like we need a business plan, but not trying to monetize it instantly, and just build something that's going to blow people's minds. Even if we don't even have the phones for it yet, build it. Eventually we will come.
You just said it. He built a layer of things people need inherently in themselves. Forget technology. They want to be connected and communicate with people. He built an app that did all that and then started wrapping things around it. You're looking for an app that says, wow, I need to use this because it makes, you know, it's what I inherently want to do as a person. Forget the technology. Yeah, no one's doing it now. They're just making up crap.
Right.
So
exactly.
Let's make a list for the next, for the episode, the next one, of all the apps that we're still using. This is a blog post I started doing, and I posted of all the apps we're still using from South by Southwest, what we use them for, and see what we compare, because I bet you a lot of us, we overlap in two or three and got rid of the rest.
Well, probably, but I'd also like to point out that there is a space for apps that are used at conferences, you know, or that are used in business environments where there's networking going on. And I, you know, I think Hashable had some faults, but I found it really handy at the time that I was using it. And I'm not going to use it every day, but I will use it as I'm at the next event where, you know, people have Twitter handles and I want to say hi. Yeah, like nice to meet you.
Exactly.
And have a database of that. Like, that was Hashable has some issues that I don't like, you know, things I don't like about it.
Right.
But the concept is solid. The idea that, you know, as you run into people, you're tracking this information. For people who are, you know, constantly trying to network, I mean, that's great. Like, no one's really built anything good for that yet. In fact, like, I use Gmail and Google Contacts is ridiculous. Like, that is the most boring piece of crap product I've ever seen from a company that's all about organizing the world's information. It can't even provide any value to my contacts. Like, where's the, you know, look at like that add in Reportive. Is it Reportive? Or, I haven't installed, but
it goes
out and pulls all your information from your social networks. It provides a little picture. If you have a picture on your social networks, it augments this information and now it even augments it in your, it used to just do it in your inbox. And now it does in your contacts too. Like, there's no reason why Google shouldn't have built that and integrated it with its own, you know, Google profiles or something, or just gone out and pulled from APIs. But it's like they don't even care.
Yeah, you just touched on something on a whole nother, you know, with Google profiles. There's that whole, I mean, I hope, God, you're going to, I'm losing my tech points for this.
Too late.
Larry Page, that name, took over Google. That's not okay, great. I hope Larry Page really goes back to Google startup roots, like he said. But I hope what the blogs are saying. But I hope he does it in startup roots, mean moving fast, because, you know, like you said, Sarah, Google could be doing a whole lot of things and doing a whole lot of things better. And I think they should buy Reportive, or I think that's what's called the Google plugin integrated. But then you look at the Google profiles. I looked at Louis Gray's Google profile the other day. I was looking at some information, and I looked at my mobile device. I was like, why? I mean, it's super clean to where it's like it almost doesn't need a mobile web view. But still, why doesn't it have a mobile web view?
Right.
I mean, it's not made by you know, some guys, you know who, from North Carolina, how to look at it. It's made by Google.
They have billions of dollars assigned a few guys to fix it. I mean, and it's just been crap for years. That's the thing that really pisses me off about it, is that it's never been good. Their contacts, specifically Gmail, of course, I love, but the contacts aspect has been just it's just such a pet peeve. I mean, I could just go on. And you know what else really makes me mad about the Google products is that they built a special website for iPhone and Android. And now that I started using the Windows Phone 7 device, I realized that the web experience of using those apps is entirely different on this Microsoft operating system. And I realized that they're competitors. But what a crappy thing to do. Why not just build an HTML5 website that works on any mobile browser? Why not build a mobile website that works on, I mean, I realize it's IE9, you know, but the next version of IE9 on Windows Phone 7 that comes out this fall is going to be compatible with the code. I mean, it's basically the code base that runs on the PC, and the code base that runs on the PC is going to be HTML5. So at that point, if they don't, you know, make their pretty iPhone optimized web app work on Windows Phone 7, then it's not about them, you know, having an issue with the underlying browser. It's about them just wanting to screw whoever uses Microsoft products. Right. It's a competitive thing. And
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, because why would they want to support people who are using Windows Phone 7? Like, why would they want to offer them a great web experience of using Google products on that? Wouldn't they rather have them on Android?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I really think it's a ego problem from these companies. I think it's an ego problem. I think Microsoft have long had an ego problem. They have some humbling things happen over the years, but I mean, they're still making billions of dollars. Apple's still making billions of dollars. Google, billions of dollars.
Wayne's making billions of dollars.
And I have a goal of making billions of dollars. And simple things that, you know, that what we're saying is not hard to do and implement. HTML5 mobile web apps across the board works on almost any device now. Why not optimize for that? But because they didn't come up with the technology, or they want to be considered the innovators or the leaders in the whatever space, then that's why they sold to adopt it. And the prime example of the company that everybody should be looking at is Yahoo. I mean, you look at the post, it was a post I read about, why didn't Yahoo create Instagram? Look how long it took Yahoo to come out with a Flickr iPhone app. Because they were sitting back saying, oh, should we support this? Should we do this? Should we do that? And in this web tech space, if you don't support, you will get left behind. If something new comes out, that gains attention.
We could do a whole show on Yahoo. Look at Skimmer. Look at all the other apps they built. They've closed down. Look at all we could build a whole show just on Yahoo closing and starting apps they never do right.
Yeah.
I even just started using Picasa just because I'm concerned over Flickr's.
Sure.
I still use Flickr, but I use Picasa as well, like as a second place to upload my photos to.
Well, there was a great post the other day. Who was it? I don't even remember what one it was in, but they were mad because they forgot about their pro account expiring. All their photos were still stored on Flickr, but they could only see their last 200 until they paid the $25 to unlock all their other photos.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
but you couldn't get
it's to not a free day. Service when well, to no, see millions of photos.
They're not. They weren't even asking to post new photos. They were asking to get their old ones. They just wanted to download some old ones, and they couldn't even get to those anymore, which is an interesting, you know, twist to how they do it on Flickr is we're only going to show you, even though you have 600, 700 photos out here, we're only going to show you the last 200 until you pay us $25.
And they couldn't, you can't export them
Once those 200 once you don't pay, you can't even get ready to download them. That's what they're saying. Don't show them on the web, but let me get to them. And Flickr says, no, pay us $25 or you don't even get them.
Right.
I kind of get that. I mean, it's their business model. They got to make money.
Well, sure. And I love Flickr. I pay every year, and that's where I keep all my public photos. And like you said, Picasa, but I use Backupify to back up that other stuff, and it's been working great so far.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with that. I mean, that's their policy, and I knew that going into it. So I think that just sounds like I didn't read my contract kind of thing. You know, I mean, $25 is not, it's not like
$2 a month.
For what they're providing, it's not that big of a deal to me. I am kind of cheap when it comes to paying for stuff because there's so much stuff that I have to try out and use, and it's like, is that really worth 99 cents? I can get really, picky when it comes to that stuff. But when it's something really valuable, like, can you please back up my hundreds of baby pictures? Then yeah, I'll pay a little bit for it. Or if it's the streaming music services, I'll pay $10 a month to have access to millions of songs on demand.
Was that your segue? That was a brilliant segue, Sarah. That was brilliant.
Thank you.
That was actually our final topic. That was the music streaming services.
There you go.
Amazon's new cloud. What service do we use? So Sarah, this was your topic. So go for it.
Well, I did try Amazon's Cloud Player, and I have used it. I did write a blog post that the headline sounds a little bad, but I asked if it was really all that innovative. Because, and of course everyone in the comments said, yes it is, of course it is. My question was really not, innovation. It was about, is this something that is really thinking about what the future of listening to music is all about? I mean, you have to buy songs and you, they're on your computer, and you have to put them in a cloud locker, and you have to own them. Like, I don't care to own music anymore. I mean, I've been with this whole subscription service mindset for so long. I mean, you know, maybe a whole year, but it's been long enough to where, like, I don't care. Like, I'm not, as long as I can get to my music from all my devices, I don't care to have some sort of sense of ownership over it. Cause the kind of stuff I'm listening to this week is going to be different than the stuff I listen to 6 months from now, for the most part, except for, you know, the classics. Like, I'm always going to occasionally want to listen to, you know, some Nirvana or something, but you know, music is kind of transitory for me. Like, I'm listening to the new stuff, the new bands, and I just want to stream it. I don't want to keep purchasing and purchasing and purchasing. So $10 a month seems like a bargain. I can even listen to some crappy music while I'm working out that I would never pay for as a CD, you know, or, you know, for an album. Like, I'd never buy, you know, Britney Spears. But maybe it has a good beat that's good for running on the treadmill too. I'm just saying, you know, like, I'm just saying, I'm not admitting anything.
How long would it take you to upload all your content to their Amazon cloud?
I walked away from the computer, so I don't know how long it took, but, I think it took at least an hour or so.
Well, how much do you have? How much music?
Oh, I didn't upload at all. I have like a few gigs. Oh, I have like 100+ gigs of music if you want to go around through all my hard drives that I have laying around here in the office. I mean, I probably have 50 or 60 gigs of maybe 70, probably about 70 gigs of music on my computer.
Yeah.
Like, that is in rotation, so to speak. But, I mean, we have a lot of gigs of music. So just the idea that I have to physically port these files around somewhere, whether it's the cloud or not,
right?
Screw it. I'd rather have 10 million songs on demand that I can stream at any time than, you know, trying to cram all my gigs of storage onto somebody's hard drive. I don't care if it's Amazon or mine or whatever. I just don't see that as any sort of, I don't see that as the future at all.
Yeah. Wayne, how much music do you have now?
Clicking on on Apple I. On my iTunes.
You didn't do this a few minutes ago. You're just getting to this.
Oh, man. Just now it's like calculate size.
Okay, so
we'll 27
gigs.
Yeah, that's what my iTunes library says, 27 gigs. So there's some videos in that as well. So, but
would you rather look at your stuff, move it to the cloud, and then playlist through that, or have unlimited streaming access to everything? Or do you want a hybrid of both? You know, what about new stuff? What are you going to do there?
Oh, that's a
question. Go ahead, sir. Either one of you.
Go ahead, sir. I'm contemplating.
Well, I mean, I think I already answered, though. I mean, I want to stream.
Right.
Yeah, I just want bandwidth from my mobile provider to be good enough to where that works all the time.
And I would like to say that the cable company here just introduced Ultra 60, so they're going to be offering 60 meg down.
Nice.
Yeah, that'll be nice. So, yeah, Wayne, which one would you rather do?
I think I prefer stream. I don't use iTunes as nearly as much as I used to since over the past 6 months, past year. Like I said, we were talking earlier, I have a Spotify USA account, and that's what I use primarily. I paid $10 or $14 a month, which one it is, mm-hmm. to have the premium access where I can listen to my mobile device. Then I can listen to it in my car. I can listen to it while I work out, you know, that sort of thing. As long as I have an internet connection, I can, you know, access from anywhere. New music, I don't have to worry about buying CDs or, you know. And if anything else I want to learn about the artist, I can just read it online. So streaming service save me bandwidth on my hard drive. You know, less worry about backup stuff. But then the only concern is when you have a service that doesn't have the music that you want to listen to immediately on that note. And so that's the only time patience comes into play. But besides that, I think I'm really, you know, moving towards streaming and therefore, I'm not necessarily worrying about having stuff on the cloud because I'm going to be streaming.
Then
that's where the data providers and the mobile providers, they catch us at. And that's where, you know, because most of us on that 2 gigabyte cap, 2 gigabyte cap, unless you grandfather in with the iPhone or either Sprint and T-Mobile, who's not going unlimited.
Well, even your home. I mean, I just read the new, I got an email, I didn't pay much attention to it, from AT&T, who provides my DSL service for one of my lines, and I wasn't paying much attention. There are changes. They want to rename some things to include UVerse and whatever, but then one of them was caps on your monthly download allowance, and it's 150 gig. And I looked at it, and I said, 150 gig, wow. For the average family, that's nothing, but for someone that streams Netflix constantly, streams downloads, you know, we're doing podcasts, videos, HD quality, we're doing all this stuff, I can eat 150 gigs of bandwidth. I mean, I can see it. And, you know, where do I draw the line? Do I want to run local stuff? Do I want to run a Sonos? Do I want to run my iTunes library? Or do I want to stream everything I do? Movies, Netflix, you know, service subscription models for music, videos on YouTube in HD quality. The kids are playing online through Xbox. I'm having, you know, video stuff with their new HD, you know, video chat service that the social geeks here will use when Sarah decides late night is okay. But what about the caps? Do you guys worry about those on a monthly basis now, or are you just not concerned yet?
I don't think I've reached the point where the caps are really concerning. We do get an email on a pretty regular basis that we're about to reach our cap on AT&T.
Yeah.
But they only charge $10 when you go over for every gig you go over.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Which is not really like that painful, it takes a while to go over another gig,
right? Think about they're giving you 150 gig for 30 something bucks a month, and they're going to charge you $10 for one gig. That's pillaging.
No, I'm talking about on the mobile,
on the cell phones.
Yeah,
2 gig for what is it? How much a month?
It takes a while to get to a gig
on a mobile device. Yeah, I'm talking about your home though. HD.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was just talking about caps in general. Oh, you know, like the concept. So like at home, I mean, I don't worry with caps at all because
you never look. I never look.
I don't. Yeah, I don't think I'm hitting any caps or getting crazy bills. I mean, I use the internet. Stream some Netflix here and there. I mean, we don't play as much video games anymore because we have a baby, so we're a little busy. So I don't know. I don't hit caps at home. I only hit caps on mobile. And in fact, I think mobile caps are a little more concerning.
I need a balance. I can't see uploading all my music locally to the cloud, so I can stream it from anywhere. But I need a balance. So on my local machine, I'm kind of like, wait, I only carry like 30 gig, but overall in music, in video stuff, a couple terabytes probably that sits there, most of it's music. There's no way I'd move that to the cloud anyway. But the idea is I'd rather supplement what I have with streaming services. So I want to have a balance between the two. I have my favorites that I've bought. That's why I have them. You know, that's why they're here. And then I want to supplement with maybe something new or a single song or something that I'm not sure of, and just give me a mix based upon a tag or an artist or, you know, something like that. And sure, some are free, like a Pandora or Last.fm. But every now and then I'll come across something I've never heard before, and then I end up buying it anyway.
Right.
So there's, I think, I like the balance between the two. So.
Well, the Cloud Locker, I mean, I should say that it does help if you have a like, you know, an esoteric music collection of unique things that you can't get on iTunes or on these services.
Huge indie music,
On the same note, so would the actual hard drive on your portable music device. You could store it there as well. You don't need the cloud for that.
Yeah.
You could just perhaps go beyond, you know, the local storage limits if you had such a large collection. So, but I don't really know that that's a huge advantage for people who have, like, if you have, you know, crazy musical tastes and you've got, I mean, how many gigs would you have to have to put it all in this cloud? And then, I mean, and it's not free, so you're paying for it. And
well,
it'd just be cheaper to just stick it on your iPod.
Amazon says it is free if you buy one song a year. From them. If you buy one song a year, it's free up to, I forget how many, what, 20, 30? It's a ridiculous gig.
Sure. And didn't you read their terms of service where, like, sounds like people can go prying into your music collection and they can reveal that information?
Probably. Just,
like, I mean, what if you stole a bunch of stuff during Napster's heyday and you stick it up in the cloud? Are you going to be liable for that at some point?
I put it all under Wayne's account. It doesn't matter.
I'm not saying I did, but I'm just saying.
We don't want to talk about that.
A lot of people did. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the MP3s we acquired was from, you know, friends' hard drives, because we literally used to swap hard drives to share music.
Right.
I mean, that's how it used to be.
Back in the day,
you'd swap hard drives and little flash drives and be like, here's some songs, right. You know?
You're off and running at that point.
Yeah. And who knows what, you know, was acquired and not acquired.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, and I want to see what happens with the Amazon one coming up. So, everybody, let's tell where you're going to be so we'll actually finish under half an hour. Wayne, where are you going to be? What's coming up for you? What's your newest launch? Did you make a new product? What's the
deal? Oh, yeah, three things. Well, I'm very excited to be attending Wear 2.0 Big Location Conference next week in Santa Clara.
Okay.
So it's going to be all about location next week. Trial client NC State is going to be presenting, talking about the platform that we built for the university. So we're excited about that, finally to get that off the ground and launch publicly. And I'm going to be attending the Black Enterprise conference that they have in Atlanta, Georgia, come May the 23rd through the 25th. And that's my upcoming events. And myself, I am launching my own iPhone app. And now I'm a little hesitant after hearing, you know, Sarah talking about the app, because I think it's a very clean and nice design and useful app, but it's one of those apps that tend to solve a simple problem, doing one thing, and providing users with some other social information. So, I hope, people find it useful. And even though it's not doing a lot of great, no new things.
Is it you every day giving us a positive message? Is that what the app is, Wayne?
Nah, it's a combination of doing a couple of things. So
You don't have to sneak it out early. You know, okay. We can wait for the launch. Does it have a name? Can we hear the name?
No, it's going to be called. It's going to be a social Wayne app. So let's.
Oh, geez. Okay, so.
But it's not another. It's not. I wouldn't look at it as another vanity app like we see like some other people. It does have some unique social features to it that I think that some people in the group chat space will keep an eye on.
Is the logo going to be you in your red shirt? I just want to know.
Nah, it's going to be my cartoon character.
And then GoKit, we heard a lot about it. What's up with GoKit?
So GoKit is still in development. Okay. We're a month out from just coming up with the idea. What a lot of people say is that, you know, they launched at South By. We're a company that said we were founded at South By from six guys sitting at a dinner table with an idea and decided to do something about it. And so we have reached the number, we're in the thousands of number of people who have registered their GoKit name. Both you and Sarah have done that, and I appreciate that. And so we're excited to be hopefully to have a working prototype that we'll be rolling out a limited access invite to the next few weeks.
Cool. What about you, Ms. Perez?
I'm not doing anything right now. I'm scheduled to go to Blackberry World, which I think is in April. Yep. Is it in April?
That was the beginning of May. So a few weeks.
Oh, May. Okay. Phew. And also... Qualcomm's Uplink.
Okay.
And that's about it for now.
Excellent. I just got back from Belgium. I was in B-Lug over in Belgium. Ooh. Yeah, I was in Antwerp for a few days, and my next out-of-town gig will be London, Manchester at the end of May. And as of today, well, I should say yesterday when everybody hears this, we launched the first episode of BlackBerry Today, which is probably a bi-weekly, which will be HD quality video only, and it will be consumer-driven for the BlackBerry side. We're not going to get deep tech about OS versioning and stuff, but more about hot apps, cool tips, what releases come in, things like that, all about the BlackBerry suites, including the playbook. So you'll find that. Actually, it's online to subscribe in iTunes, and you can also find it in the carousel of the BlackBerry Playbook podcast app. So.
Can I get it in Zune?
You will be able to get it in Zune as well. You will. You'll be able to get it.
I feel a little silly saying
that. Did you say Zune?
Actually, Sarah, I do have a link for you for the Zune. It will be available for the Zune as well.
Yes. I did mention I am testing a Windows Phone 7, right?
Yeah. Okay. And it will be available. We put it up on Vimeo as well in the HD quality and probably through YouTube. So it'll be available everywhere. But that one's episode one came out today. You'll find it at Spike Studio. Everything's going to be through spikestudio.com. So. That's it. We should tell the other people that Jeff couldn't get connected, and Corvita sent a message later saying she didn't know that was us calling her, so she didn't answer her phone. So
nice. She's screening it. We didn't make it.
For those that were looking for, Caleb on this one. And she says,
Caleb is in Mexico.
Caleb's in Mexico. Everyone was looking for Yobongo information. He is in Mexico. We will get Caleb on to talk about it more in depth as usual, so we can see what's going on with upcoming cities, hopefully, for Yobongo, as well as where they're going to be. But Caleb's after his huge South by Southwest launch, which we were all, I think, Sarah, were you at the party as well, his launch night party?
I was at a Yobongo party. Was that the
If it was a Friday night, I believe that was it. But we were there for that. It was nice to see those guys really get some good support, and they've got a lot of press. So we'll let Caleb take care of that when he gets back.
Cool.
Otherwise, we did it. We're on time, and we're going to come back the next time. One of the topics will definitely be applications and what survived from South by Southwest, as well as what we're using daily on our devices. I also need to throw in there, I will now be writing for Byte Magazine. The old BYTE Byte Magazine is back in full effect, so I will be authoring there a lot through tips and articles, and also starting a podcast there on their app Byte Mobile on applications. So look for that. That's going to be a very cool thing on the launch that's going to be coming up in a few weeks, so everyone remembers it back in the day. Get back involved with Byte. Anything else, you two?
Nope.
Back there's two of you. Okay, good.
Long live QR codes. That's what I'm going to say.
Hey, you know what? We should talk about that again.
Down with QR codes. Up with NFC.
Yeah. Oh, topic two next time, because I love them both. All right, everybody, it's another Social Geeks. If you need to reach us, you guys know what to do. It's the Social Geeks on Twitter. You can reach us at 32345geeks or send us an email at social@thesocialgeeks.com.